and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for March 11th. I'm John Gibson, and with me from lovely Tokyo Dome is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Well, it is lovely Tokyo Dome. I'm doing well. It's lovely because I'm back home.
You're back home? What do you mean home? Did you used to live here in the Dome?
Get real. I'm back in Tokyo, dude.
I know what you mean. All right. Well, yeah, it's March Madness. It's March Madness on the diamond with the WBC. It's too bad it only happens every 4 years.
It is. This is the absolutely the best WBC yet.
Yeah, it's great. All right, before we get started, I have an announcement. I'm proud to say that we have a new sponsorship agreement. We are now being brought to you in part by One World Sports, which will be showing Yomiuri Giants games live this year. We're honored to welcome them aboard, and we thank Shooters in Nagoya for the years of support they've given us. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
For more information on One World Sports, go to their homepage. It's oneworldsports.com. Ask them how you can watch Giants games live on TV.
Absolutely. What a deal.
All right. So it's a whole new exciting season of baseball and a new direction for Japan Baseball Weekly.
Okay. Let's hop on it.
All right. So on today's show, we've got an interview with former Swallows and Eagles pitcher Kevin Hodges, and we're going to discuss a whole lot of WBC.
Yeah, we got a lot of WBC going on. We got like the extra double special helping of WBC going on here in Japan.
All right. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right. Okay. Well, just to give you a little background, I on my Facebook page a couple of weeks ago, I saw a picture of Kevin Hodges on his page throwing BP in the Lions spring camp in Nango, Miyazaki Prefecture, which is, I think Nango means the boonies in Japanese. And
it means don't go.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's been my option. You want to go to Nango and no. Anyway, Kevin is, at first I thought, well, they brought him in as a coach or what? And it turns out that he was hired last year, so forgive my ignorance, which if you're listening, you have done a lot of that. Kevin has been the overseas scout and overseas scout for the Cebu Lions, and he was very gracious in interrupting his busy schedule after his homecoming from spring training in Japan, where he went to Miyazaki and also Kochi Prefecture, hopped back to Houston, Texas, and we caught up with him. Now, Kevin came to pitch in Japan in 2001, the year the Yakult Swallows won their last pennant, the same first year with Alex Ramirez. They had quite an all-star team. They had pretty much a Yakult Swallow all-star team
that year.
Iwamura
good.
And Inaba and a few others. In any case, he came that year. He got his feet wet in Japan. Next year, he won the Central League wins title. And it was his career season. He bounced around a little after that. He went and played in Korea. He came back for one more season. He came back for the inaugural season of the Rakuten Golden Eagles. And now he's a scout with the Lions. And we caught a couple of things. Now, in the discussion, we talk about Jose and Ortiz and at different times. And we're talking about the Lions' acquisition in June, I believe, of Jose Ortiz, who's a longtime veteran. He sort of splits his seasons between Mexico and Japan. He'll play in Mexico for 3 months, and then he'll come and play in Japan.
And somebody will need him. Hey, we need a batter. Just go get Jose.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's kicking around somewhere.
Exactly. Well, he's usually hitting around. He's usually hitting a ton. And he'll play in Mexico for a few months, and then he'll come back and play in Japan for 2.5 years, and it's back to Mexico for 2 months, and back to Japan. So he came, and the other guy we're talking about is Esteban Salcedo. Cero Germán, who was kind of a utility guy for the Lions and a wonderful player. So I think that with that out of the way, let's hear what Kevin had to say.
Okay, tonight we're joined by Kevin Hodges, former pitcher with the Yakult Swallows, Samsung Lions, Rakuten Eagles, and now a scout with the Cebu Lions. Thank you for being on our show.
thanks a lot for having me.
Oh, yeah, it was good to catch up with you, and good to see you were with the Lions. It slipped past me, but I saw it on your Facebook. You know, the Lions had some big pickups last year. It wasn't just Jose was probably the biggest, but, I mean, they released Chris Carter, but Chris actually did pretty well for a guy with two knees. He was just learning, you know, kind of learning their names. He actually had decent numbers. They weren't, I guess, I don't know the whole story there, but he did okay.
I guess Chris Carter, and you know, he just couldn't stay healthy.
Right.
Everybody that you talk to, you know, including the other foreign pitchers and
players,
you know, Randy Williams or those guys, and just guys, you know, even me throughout the season this year, there's not one single person out there, scouts, you know, American scouts for you know, other teams and whatnot. Everyone said the same thing. Oh, he can hit. And, you know, I think once he was healthy and had a role with the team, he actually, you know, did kind of what you would expect, I guess, or what we expected.
Right.
And I know that, you know, gosh, if he stayed healthy, I really think he'd probably be back there right now.
Right.
I know that in his short time, he seemed to become a fan favorite.
Right.
I heard on a lot of the blogs that he was, you know, a popular, player for the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
And I even heard the newspaper it kind of dubbed him as President Carter. That was my reaction when I first heard it. I just laughed because, He's a great guy. He's a smart guy. And he just, you know, he was able to get the clutch hits, which, you know, sometimes that's more important than your batting average or how many RBIs that you had is when you caught him.
Yeah, he did. He had a couple of really big games, as the pennant race was just heating up and the Lions had fallen out of first place, and he had some big games. And then, like most of the team, he kind of fell flat in the final weeks.
Yeah, I think personally, I haven't asked him or don't know or didn't ask the team, but I have a feeling he just probably wasn't feeling very good.
Mm.
You know, he probably just wasn't 100% is my guess, you know, to where he just wasn't able to perform healthy. But yeah, it's too bad for him. You know, he's the, on paper, or maybe the perfect guy for Japan.
Right.
I just didn't work out, you know, physically for him.
Okay.
Esteban Hermann did about what he did in AAA. I mean, his average wasn't as good, but that was kind of expected.
Right.
You know, I kept saying or thinking to myself, if he can just survive the first month.
Right.
If he can just make the adjustment and stay on the team and stay in good spirits and, you know, good everything, then, and, you know, the role he filled on the team, I thought maybe was more important than his batting average or you know, the stolen bases was, you know, a surprise, not a surprise that he can run, but just that, I would say most in general, the catchers in Japan are better than the catchers in AAA.
Okay.
Pretty much hands down.
Right.
So I thought, well, you know, the pitchers are a little faster to the plate. Catchers are a little faster to second.
Right.
He's not going to be on base as much as he was in America. So there's no way he's going to get the same amount of stuff on bases.
Right.
But I think he ended up at 41. I can't remember exactly, but, yeah, I mean, that was a real accomplishment to get that many stolen bases as a foreign player, I guess. And I know there was some record. I saw they were several years old, from a foreign player to steal that many bases.
Well, so. I think it goes back to the 50s, actually, or 70s, maybe. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's a little bit padded with most guys or home run guys, power guys, big lugs. But, you know, there's been plenty of opportunities with the kind of, more of an athlete type of guy that just didn't get the playoff season because their performance wasn't there. So, you know, credit to Esteban, Hermann for, you know, playing hard. His teammates really like him. The coaches like him. You know, he's a professional and he's adjusted, it seems, to living in Japan.
Sure. He started off in center, he started at second and then he was in center and then he was at third base. And I was telling him that, you know, he's seeing Japan position by position.
Yeah, he was even leadoff hitter to start the season, which I thought I was like, he's leadoff?
Yeah.
With Kiriyama, was I think still hurt a little bit, but
right.
Yeah, and the other thing that happened there when once we signed Ortiz, I didn't stop and write down the stats.
Right.
Once Ortiz got there, I thought to myself, this is going to help Esteban as much as anything.
Yeah.
That Ortiz is going to, you know, they're both Dominican,
right.
You know, both Dominican guys. Ortiz knows every pitcher.
Yep.
In the league. Yeah. So, you know, I was like, he's going to do nothing but help.
Yeah.
Esteban out right here. So, you know, that wasn't a factor in signing Ortiz, but I thought to myself, oh, this is actually going to help, you know, Carter and those guys, because I know Ortiz is the type of guy that's going to help them out, not, you know, withhold information from them.
Right.
So,
yeah. No, I was thinking along those lines when Jose was signed, and I saw Esteban maybe a day or two after. I asked him if he knew him. He says, oh yeah, well, we all know Jose, and I've known Jose for years, and he's such a great guy. So, let me, ask, so who else is coming with the Lions this year?
We got, Dennis Sarfate from
Oh, right.
Park, which, you know, new to us, and, you know, just, I guess briefly on him, since y'all, you know, most people know about him, but, his, in spring training is the first time I've ever seen pitch.
Okay.
Game, or seen big live.
Right.
And, you know, I was in all of AAA this year, both international and Pacific Coast League.
Right.
And, you know, we were kind of looking for a closer. Because,
okay.
You know, what the Wakuli
right.
was the closer last year, and I guess the year before, Maki Top was the closer.
Right.
And, you know, which, you know, both of those guys are like number one, number two, or somewhere in that area.
Right.
Starters.
I mean, right.
So, you know, that was kind of something we were searching for, and when the you know, based on seeing Sarfate in the bullpen and seeing his pitch, you know, his fastball and forkball and curveball, it looks better than just about every guy I saw on AAA closer wise.
Okay,
he looks better than any candidate I saw. So hopefully it, you know, works out that way. I don't know if the pitching has just been in AAA compared to what it was, but there's not anybody that has a forkball, you know, his fastball and a curveball. And then you mix in, he's already been in Japan.
Right.
He's already saved 35 games 1 year.
Right.
So, you know, that's, I'm expecting that's the best, option for us.
Okay.
If he is given the closer role, which I think that's why he's there. I'm not sure, but, everything I know, but, the new guy for us, you know, fresh, player is Ryan Spilbors.
Okay.
He's a outfielder. He can play all three outfield positions. He mainly played last year. He's played right. I don't think he's done a whole lot of center field, but, he can do it, you know, if it was needed. He's gonna. The plan is to have him in right field.
Okay.
And he plays good defense. He's, you know, pretty good range and accurate arm. It's not a, you know, not an Alex Ochoa or somebody like that, but it's a good strong arm and accurate. So he's gonna fit in. You know, that's one thing that's tough for outfielders. To come over to Japan. I mean, these outfielders in Japan are, you know, they're 100% the whole practice with their throws, and most of them that are regular players have really good arms. I mean, some guys are kind of shocked when they're like, man, those guys are really good. I'm like, yeah, they are. I mean, you gotta be, a good to, maybe a little better than average outfielder to kind of blend in over there, I guess you could say. But, Spilboy, he's a line drive, hitter. You know, I'm expecting a lot more doubles than home runs.
Okay.
You know, with this ball changing, you know, someone like Willie Molina with the strength that guy has, hit like 21 or 20 something home runs last year. It's pretty tough to expect more or somewhere around that area for Spilboard.
Okay.
Be at 15, I think that would be pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. You came over in the middle of the season. And in 2001, and you contributed to winning a pennant.
And then the next year you had I have to say it was your career year in 2002. You probably struck out more batter. You pitched 200 innings, which may have been a first for you.
Yeah, definitely was.
And 136 some odd strikeouts, which was a little more than perhaps you were used to, and not many home runs as you got on in your career. And I think 2003, your home runs rate kind of jumped a bit. And so what were the big adjustments you were making? Now I have a question, because we see this a lot. Players have big years, and what went right for you in 2002 that perhaps hadn't gone right for you before? To have, you know, it was, I was looking through your career, and it was your big year in wins. So what happened that year? Was magic?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was you know, there's some luck involved with getting that many wins.
Mm-hmm.
I had, you know, luckily behind me pitching was the Rocket Boy, Hiroshi and Ishii and Takatsu.
Right.
They did not lose or blow one game behind me the whole year.
That helps.
And I didn't complete one game the whole year.
Right.
So every time I pitched, one of those guys, if not all three of them, pitched. So the fact that they were so good also kept me from getting the no decisions.
Okay.
You know, one run game. I can remember a game I left at Tokyo Dome winning 1-0.
Wow.
You know, and I win the game 1-0.
Wow.
You know, after only going 6 innings.
Wow.
So, I mean, I consider that kind of a, you know, I pitched good.
Right.
But it's kind of lucky that something didn't happen that scored one run or whatever, you know. So, but, you know, aside from the luck side of it, after going over there that half year, I won 5 games that first half year. I got 4 2/3 innings in the Japan series and got pulled out.
Right.
Right before the fifth, you know, right before the third out, which, you know, I should have been pulled out. I hit a guy, I walked the guy, and Tuffy Rhodes was coming up.
Was that the second game?
I think it's probably. So that gave me, even though I got those wins that year, the first year.
Right.
I saw areas that I could improve on. The left-handed batters were killing me.
Okay.
And you know, I threw a sinker. They were slicing it to left field, and I was like, well, I got to stop. I've got to figure out a way to keep that from being their easy hit to left field.
Right.
So I started throwing a cutter.
Okay.
Kenshin Kawakami was throwing a cutter in the same league.
Right.
And I would watch him on TV, and I was like, and that pitch is working against those guys. I was like, I got to figure out how to throw a cutter. I've never thrown one in my life.
Wow.
But, you know, a week later, I'm throwing cutters in the game.
That was a good adjustment then, because, I mean, it's not that easy.
Yeah. And you know, it's the other part is I figured out that how team-oriented those scouting reports were.
Uh-huh.
Based on, hey, this is how, you know, I'm putting myself in the Yokohama Bay Stars or Hanshin Tigers or Giants hitting meeting, thinking to myself, what are they looking for tonight?
Okay.
How can I go a different direction? You know, they're probably in the meeting going, hey, you know, the Giants one time tried to put, they took out all their stars and put on these little lefty, little slap hitters.
Right.
And I saw, you know, I'm sitting in the Tokyo Dome or underneath the, you know, warming up and I'm hearing the lineup. And I'm like, who are these guys? I've never heard that name. Who's that guy? I've never heard that name. And they're like, oh, it's a small guy. I was like, all right. I just start laughing. And I'm like, that's fine. Yeah, that's great. And I'm in their head. I use those scouting reports to my advantage because I realized that the whole team was going to stick to that report.
Right.
No matter what. Even if I change and all of a sudden, wait a second, he's throwing cutters now. What do we do?
Yeah, that's...
Well, the scouting report says we're going to throw a sinker. He's throwing a cutter, so I beat him. I mean, I already thought in my head, I'll beat him. I've already beat him, and the game hadn't started. that's where the adjustment or the comfort allowed me to pitch so well that season was I adjusted and, you know, even changed my personal pitching maybe from start to start. You know?
Okay.
Maybe I threw a tsunami all sinkers one game. Well, a week later, I was throwing him curveballs, which I didn't throw.
Okay.
Because I knew he was going to be looking for the sinker. I'm like, well, you know, I would talk to Farouk and son and say, hey, I'm going to throw, let's throw him the curve. Let's throw this guy, a four. Let's throw this guy there. Let's go throw him the fourth ball. Let's throw him changeups today. You know, it was like a whole new thought process in each game. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and good luck this season.
Yeah. Hopefully I make it back over there for the Japan series.
All right, man. Take care and have a nice evening.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot for being on the show, Kevin, again.
Yep, thank you very much, Kevin. Appreciate it.
We had so much to talk about. I think we talked for close to an hour and a half. So,
well, you only recorded an hour and 7 minutes. That was the file I got. And, boy, that was a lot of editing work.
Well, you know, John's good at editing, you know. And I'm a proponent of, if you're good at something, you do it. Exactly.
Do a lot of it.
Do a lot of it.
On my behalf, do some as well. It's good because I usually listen to other podcasts when I'm working out. So I listened to your chat while I was working out at the gym, and every time I heard something, I made a little memo on my iPhone.
Oh, okay.
And I said, okay, I like this, I like that, and then I was able to get everything together and then figure out exactly how much of what we could use.
Right.
And put it together.
So what did you think about that? About what Kevin had to say?
Well, yeah, after that workout, after your two-man show,
it was an epic, is what it was.
What really grabbed my attention were the two gyro balls that Kevin apparently learned how to throw from Daisuke Matsuzaka while he was here. Because if you weren't listening carefully, I think you missed him, and you might want to go back and check this out. But the first one was, he said, what Ortiz would help guys out with information and not withhold knowledge from teammates. Now, this is something I always wondered about when I see a midseason trade and I see another guy sitting on the bench and talking to other players. Are they giving them secrets about the other team? Are they giving them hints about other players? Are they helping them out? And is it a two-way street? You know, you're getting the information as the new player. You're offering information as the long-time player who's been there for a while.
Right.
So I didn't really think it happened. I thought everybody really wanted to win. So when he said that Ortiz was not the type of guy to withhold information from teammates, it said to me that a lot of times this happens. That, you know, obviously you're on a team and you want to win, but you shouldn't be worried about who's going to get what. Obviously, when you come in a situation with Ortiz, I think he wanted playing time.
Sure.
He was going to come in as the extra guy.
And he didn't want to be in Mexico.
And he didn't want to be on the bench.
Exactly.
He wanted to be on Benchico. So he wanted to get, obviously he's been there. He had to help Chris Carter, who was just coming to Japan, maybe didn't know some of the pitchers,
right.
Didn't know some of the ways that, some of the thinking and everything. So the more he helps Chris Carter, the less he gets on the field. But you know, when Kevin said that, I thought, wow, this really is an issue. And I wonder how long it has gone on and how many players. Obviously, it's personalities. You've got different relationships, different dynamics between certain players.
Okay, and then there's some players like former Swallows MVP, 2001 Central League MVP, Roberto Pettigini, who withhold information, I think, not because they're withholding information, but they just withhold communication. They just don't speak well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're pleasant guys, but they're just so painfully shy. But I'll tell you, the thing about Ortiz, when he signed with his second club, which was the Lotte Marines, basically the word the Marines got, according to Bobby Valentine, the word the Marines got from Oryx was, he's not a good fielder.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a second baseman, and they made him play third base. And it was his debut at third base. But Valentine said what they left out of the discussion,
mm-hmm.
you know, what kind of a player is what a good teammate Jose Ortiz was. And wherever Jose Ortiz has gone, people have said, what a good teammate Jose Ortiz is. And when I mentioned in the discussion that Esteban Herman, I asked him, I said, you know Jose? He said, we all know Jose. I said, he's a good guy. He said, he's a great guy.
Right.
So that was not a big shock. I kind of expected to see, I was thinking along with Kevin at the time, that this will be great for Esteban. And I don't know about the numbers, the splits on it, but Esteban did get a little better after the start of the season. He started the season well, but he did pick things up, particularly his batting average picked up a little bit, and mm-hmm. the steals just never stopped. So.
All right, so the second gyro ball that he zipped past maybe more than one of us for a strike, I think, was, he made it sound like pitchers get so set in their ways, and they don't add to their repertoire unless they're in a similar situation that he was in, which was he was looking to make some adjustments.
Right.
So he was watching TV and saw Kenshin Kawakami, the artful dragon.
that's
throwing
well
a cutter.
Put.
And, I look at guys like R.A. Dickey, who experienced a renaissance by converting to knuckleballer. And then,
right.
I mean, it had me thinking that I should go out and start working out and try to throw
exactly.
knuckleballs.
Exactly.
I can make a
I saw Mariano Rivera on TV. I'll throw a cutter.
Yeah. So it gets to me to thinking. I'm like, well, why don't pitchers – I mean, he said he had a cutter game ready in a week.
Yeah, which is
why
is,
don't other,
I think he got one of those microwavable
a microwave
put it in the oven in 30 seconds.
Cook it fast. Don't leave it in there too long.
Don't leave it up in the microwave.
If guys can get, I mean, why not go into a battle with all the ammunition you can get? If you're a pitcher, wouldn't you learn how to throw everything? Even if, and I know it has to do with arm slots and your motion and what you're comfortable throwing,
right.
and if you can throw these pitches for strikes and if you can throw them
sure.
in the game situation. But when he said he had a cutter ready and game ready in a week, I'm like, well, why didn't he make that adjustment before? And why don't other pitchers make more adjustments and learn different pitches and take those to the mound when they're throwing? I mean, we're watching the WBC now, and I heard someone say the other day, this pitcher throws the kitchen sink. He throws everything. And I think that's the kind of guy I want on my team, because whether he's successful with it or not, he's willing to throw everything. That's going to keep batters off balance.
Yeah, potentially if he can throw them for effect is or throw them as setup pitches or something. Yeah, that's the thing. Of course, this very much reminds me what you say. It reminds me of the comments of Japanese major leaguers when they go to America and they see these tremendous body types playing baseball. But what they see is people who don't get good leads. They see guys who are clumsy fielders. They see guys who can't bunt. They see all these little things that would not be permitted in Japan. And they say, well, what a shame that these big, healthy, strong hitters can't be complete players. Now, my thinking on that, there's two ways of looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is this. There's only so much time in a day. And you
don't have, I know it.
And you have to focus on the things that are going to get you where you want to go, or you focus on the things that you think are going to get you where you want to go. And in some respects, there are gatekeepers. In Major League Baseball, minor league teams, minor league coaches are gatekeepers. If you're a big guy, and I'll take the example of Jeremy Powell, if you're a big curveball pitcher coming out of high school, they say, curveball, what's up with this curveball nonsense?
Right, velocity.
You're going to throw a heater.
Velocity and
work
velocity
on the heater. Everything velocity. Comes off the heater. But what happened was, in the major leagues, he got away from what he was really good at because he needed to show that he was willing to throw his fastball in order to get to the major leagues. But his bread and butter pitch was his breaking ball, and he got away from it until he came back to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So the point being that there's only so many things you can work in. In Japan, you have to work on your fundamentals or you don't get a job. In the majors, if you spend your time working on fundamentals and things that will actually make you effective, mm-hmm. sometimes you won't get a job because they're not doing the things that are going to win you a job.
Right.
And so I think what we see is a selection process, sort of a natural selection. These kind of players become major league players because they're big and strong and they spend their time becoming bigger and stronger as opposed to being sharper base runners and better fielders.
Right. And I talk to players, I've talked to scouts before, and one thing that they point out is people label these players right away.
Sure.
Scouts label them, coaches label them, players amongst themselves, they label each other. He's a power hitter. you know, he's a singles hitter, he does this well, he does that well. So we all want to put, we all want to group people in certain situations.
Yeah, true.
But for pitchers, it seems to me, if you can throw, you can go out there with lots of ammunition and throw everything and keep guys off balance, you're going to have more success than maybe relying on control and trying to spot fastballs.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you can get away with it, because pitching isn't like going, you know, pitching isn't like going to the unless you're Kevin Hodges in 2002. Pitching isn't like going to the grocery store and just picking a pitch off the shelf and saying, "Hey, I'll try this tomorrow.
How much is this?"
That's how it sounds. It's like, "Wow, I hit my slider to left field. Let me go down the aisle too. Give me a box of these cutters.
A box of cutters.
Okay.
As opposed to box cutters.
Exactly. And wait a minute, my fork ball's not so good. I'm only going to upgrade my fork ball tomorrow next time I go to the Ozabu National Super."
Nice.
So anyway, it's not like that, because a struggle, for example, you know, most pitchers want to acquire a good changeup. And changeups are really hard because you throw them with the same motion as a fastball, and they do funny things to your pitches.
Mm-hmm.
They do funny things to your fastball. They do funny things to the way you work as a pitcher. This is another issue. It's not just a physical thing. It's a mental thing. It's what the team needs. Now, the other thing is, and I'm going to say this in support of what John said, is that having had this discussion, I remember this great thing the other day about Will Myers. Now, Will Myers is probably the best minor league hitter in the United States right now.
Tampa Bay Rays, right?
And he was with the Tampa Bay Rays after the Kansas City Royals thought, "Whoa, I can get a couple old pitchers for him. So let's get him."
Hey, they got Big Game James.
They got Big Game James. Yes, indeed, James Shields. Yes, and so they got these guys, and they let go Will Myers, and the Rays. Everybody. Who in the sabermetric community is drooling over this trade, saying, "Man, the Royals got taken to the bank every which way from Sunday." But here's what Tampa Bay, and this is one of the reasons I love Joe Maddon and why I love the Tampa Bay Rays. What do they say? "Well, you know, you're a heck of a hitter, but you know what? We need you to be more than a hitter. We need you to be a guy who hits the cutoff man. We need you to be a guy who goes..."
We need you to be a player.
Exactly. We need you to be a competitor. We need you to be a winner who can have all these different skills. And you have the ability to do them, so we're going to expect you to do them. And so they're going to. The word is right now he's going to start the minors to work on his skills. And I absolutely applaud that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's so good for baseball.
It is, and hopefully he can develop. And there were other things in this Kevin Hodges chat that you had that I didn't cut out, that I didn't edit out. He talked about the scouting reports and how the Giants changed their lineup. He talked about the Lions stuff, about how he saw a lot of Triple-A pitchers, but nobody had better stuff.
And Sarfate.
And Sarfate, Dennis Sarfate, who came over from the Hiroshima Carp. And surface of the talk was really good, but those gyro balls really, really... really stood out for me.
Fireballs.
Did anything else in particular of the things that I didn't edit out?
No, you left some of the meat in there. You could cut out a lot of my fat. Thank you for that. My fat percent went way down after that. So I really enjoyed. Yeah, first of all, the discussion of how Kevin became a really big pitcher in 2002 was an interesting story, and you know, it just doesn't normally work the way it worked for Kevin Hodges, which is probably why it explains why this was one season. You know, he had this, he was in the right place mentally, he was with a decent enough team, good atmosphere, and he could, you know, "Oh, I'm going to throw my curveball next week. Oh, great. Just pull it out of the bag. I'm going to throw my cutter. I'm going to throw my slider. I'm going to throw my change. I'm going to throw my my sinker." Whatever. But the way he talked about it was like, "Wow, I can do this." And it just doesn't seem that easy. And it's normally not that easy, but it worked for him. He got perfect relief. and he just had this magical season.
Of course, you called it. I mean, you smacked him in the head by calling it luck. The way you asked the question, I thought he was going to jump through the Skype and beat you up. But
yeah, that's the normal. That's the normal response to a player whenever you say, you know, when a player gets a fluke hit, you know.
Yeah, it's okay for them to call it lucky, though.
Yeah, but it's
not for us.
Yeah, you get a bad swing. You get a fat pitch. You put a bad swing on it. It squibbles through the infield. Nice hitting. Well, nice result. I ain't gonna argue with nice result. Good for you. You got the you didn't strike out.
Right. You know, get the bat on the ball.
So he competed, and he was in a situation where everything he made great adjustments. He was in the proper mindset to make great adjustments. Things bounced well for him, and he had a marvelous season. And now the Lions have have one of these legion of scouts who are of these foreign scouts over there, trying to get talent to improve the level of Japanese professional baseball. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing that's going on. Talked a little bit about the Lions and the new guy, Ryan Spilbers. And the last thing that got me, caught my attention about the Kevin Hodges discussion is I think there's a perceptible shift in the kind of players that teams are looking for. It used to, you said it was the big hitters. It was the big, slow, minor league sluggers who couldn't get a job because they couldn't field. And now they're saying, well, if you can field and you can hit for average and hit for line drives, we'll take you.
Mm, yeah.
And, that's a step up for Japanese baseball.
It is. And it also means that players in the States are going to have to develop all parts of their games to make it elsewhere,
Right.
If they're going to go overseas, if they see that the dream of playing in the major leagues might not be realized for them, that they're going to have to work on the detail, the finer points of their games. And that's only good for baseball.
Right.
It's good for baseball everywhere.
And I'll tell you, talking to some of the scouts here, who are we're inundated with scouts for the WBC, the two rounds here in Japan. And I don't mean that in a bad way or anything. It's actually wonderful. And talking to some of the scouts, saying, we've got players who have minimal future with us, but we like them personally, and we would love to see them play in Japan and get a chance to really show what they can do, where someone's going to appreciate it,
right?
Because the timing isn't right for them here. And I think, WBC in that respect is a great outlet. So people like Kevin and Matt Scrametta with the Hawks and so on. Yeah, so it's a great experience, and I think it is interesting. We're going to see Ryan Spilbrough. Hopefully he'll find a way through the crowded foreign setup with the Lions, and hopefully Dennis Cerfate will have a chance, a second chance on his second chance in Japan.
Right.
Maybe he'll have a Craig Brazil comeback. All right, thanks a lot, Kevin, and we'll be talking to you soon, I hope.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kevin, and I look forward to meeting you. All right, so let's
John move. Says that's all the guys.
Let's talk about the WBC now. Japan played in Pool A in Fukuoka. Fukuoka, the messed up name, Dome. And they didn't win the pool. Cuba won the pool. But Japan reached the Tokyo round, which was the goal. And I think in that last game, I don't even know that they were even serious about winning it. But a 6-3 loss isn't that bad to Brazil. To Cuba in the finale there, in the Group A finale. But the game against Brazil was kind of tense at moments.
Yeah, Japan could have lost. Japan was outplayed by Brazil.
Yeah, definitely. It was a 5-3 win for Japan in that first game. Masahiro Tanaka got the start. He was just not locating. He was leaving pitches up. Brazil deserves a lot of credit.
Right.
The guys really put some good swings on balls. They had some quality at-bats. The thing that I was impressed with was they were looking for off-speed pitches, and when they got hangers or hittable pitches, they put good swings on them.
Yep.
And drove them. I was really impressed with what Barry Larkin has done with that team. He really proved himself as a skipper to me. I think major league teams should think about giving him a job.
Well, he doesn't. I got from talking to Barry, I got the impression that he has been approached for that, but it's not where he wants to go right now. He would prefer to be an international guy and going here and there and working on different things. Now, I would also add that Rafael Fernandez of the Swallows had a great game. He won the qualifier final against, they won the 1-0 qualifier final against Panama in Panama to get Brazil this far. And it was really, to be honest, it was really a shame that Brazil didn't win, didn't beat China, because Brazil, I know we're talking about Japan, but Brazil's such a, like our step kids. Half the team or a third of the team is Japanese, ethnic Japanese, and a lot of the guys play here. And it was a great story. Brazil was within a double play of beating Japan.
Yeah.
They failed to turn a double play, and that cost them the game. Then they played Cuba really tough. And then they lost to China. They were pretty much spent when they got to China. And China's strategy was, we're going to lose to Japan. We're going to lose to Brazil. We're going to lose to Japan. We're going to lose to Cuba. Let's beat up on Brazil.
We want to try to win that game.
Yeah. So their strategy was to win one game, and Brazil's strategy was to be competitive in every game.
Right.
And in that sense, they both succeeded.
Yeah. Well, this is my beef with the WBC rules, and I think it took a team like China, which was really ill-equipped to go into games with, in which I think they were the only team that played three consecutive days.
In the Pool A, yeah.
In Pool A, and they had to obviously exhaust their pitching and all that stuff. But I think they waited. They strategized about how they were going to figure this thing out. Brazil was a victim of it in terms of not being able to throw its best pitchers all the time. And I think these rules and the pitch counts help the major league players.
Sure.
But it hinders the other teams and other countries that are still developing in the game. That's my beef with the rules. But we'll go on to the second game for Japan. Japan beat China 5-2. And this was another struggle. There wasn't really much to say here. They didn't really look all that good, but Kenta Maeda was pretty good.
He was good, and this is a case. This is unlike the 5-3 game against Brazil, where Japan had to come back in the eighth inning to win, to take the lead. And when Hirokazu Ibata started building his resume for the WBC, some big at-bats by him, a big at-bat by Abe, a fortunate result, hit the ball. He had a good at-bat, but the ball bounced well for Japan. So anyway, then we get China, in which basically Kenta Maeda beats China, and then China comes back towards the end of the game and scores a couple of runs and makes it close. Then we get to the Japan's final game, which is against Cuba. Now, Cuba and Japan have already qualified at this stage.
Right.
And Cuba just pretty much beat the daylights out of Japan for eight innings.
Right. I didn't think. I mean, I looked at the lineup. I saw Ibata in the number three hole. I saw, I don't even know what I saw. It was so long ago. But my whole attitude was, well, this is a practice game. You know, this is a practice game where we don't want to get anybody hurt. We don't want to get a situation where we show too much to Cuba because we might be seeing them down the line again. I just think they went out there and went sort of through the motions, and it kind of showed up because Cuba's a big swinging team.
Sure.
If you're going to throw fastballs, they're going to connect with some of them by accident if they're around the plate.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. They got a couple big hits.
Well, what you said is essentially what Yamamoto and Masataka Nashida were saying before the game, the day before the game, which was the purpose was to get some people playing time, was to go out and compete with guys who needed more time and see what we learned about ourselves, see what we learned about the Cubans. It was a case of, yes, we need this game to get in form. And, if in form means going up against pitchers who can't find the strike zone for an entire inning, and when you're losing 6-0, finally getting a couple of good swings, then Japan was really in form because that's
right.
Exactly what they did.
Yeah, that's all they did. Well, I think you hit it on the head when we talked about the WBC roster for Japan in a couple episodes ago when you talked about Hirokazu Ibata of the Dragons. And I think I had him on the bubble. I'm not sure if I had tossed him aside, but you hit it on the head. He came in and had a big hit in the Pool A game. He came in and had a big hit in the Tokyo round here to knock in a run, and he's that guy. Like I said, I don't think Japan needs its major league players. No. I think there are future major leaguers on the roster now. There are guys who probably could have gone over if they wanted to. Ibáñez certainly is a guy who probably would have held his own. I don't know about the at the plate, but he was such a great defensive player as a youngster.
He would have been a star. He would have been a hitter. The image of Ibáñez is really harmed by his playing in a low run environment in Nagoya. He was in many ways the best. I think he was the best Dragons player of that decade,
yeah,
from 2001
right.
to 2010.
Well, it was good for him to get a start against Cuba and get some swings and see some live pitching, and I think that transferred over to the Tokyo round when he came up with a big hit over here, and it was excellent stuff. And then let's talk about the Tokyo round now.
Yep.
First game, Japan went up against Taiwan and really struggled. And it just reminded me, I was sitting for game one, sitting in the press box watching this game, thinking, I'm looking at the Chunichi Dragons, but they just have different uniforms on. Because they're pitching well, they play good defense, but they don't score runs.
Ah. here's the problem with that is that we're not in Nagoya Dome anymore, Toto.
Oh, wow. And there's no Sho Nakata lounging around in the outfield for us.
Yeah, this is the... You're in the home. You're going where pitchers have to walk on eggshells.
Right.
And this ain't Nagoya, baby.
Right. So Japan came from behind twice, including
right.
Ibáñez getting a clutch RBI single in the ninth inning to tie the score, and
right.
then they pushed over a run in the 10th inning to beat Taiwan 4-3. I called it an instant classic. I think that word gets thrown around a lot too much, but there's nothing instant about a game that lasts 4 hours and 37 minutes.
Yeah, only the instant that I want to get out of here.
I mean, I caught the last train home. After listening to both managers in the press conferences, I caught the last train home, so had anything else gone wrong, I would have been knocking on your door.
Well, you're always welcome, bud.
That's good to know, because we're not done with this thing.
Yeah, well, okay, well, that's a possibility still. We got 3 games left. Now, the one thing that got me about that game was it was, in many ways, Japan's first game in the second round was similar to their game against Brazil and similar to their game against Cuba, in that they had really bad at-bats in the middle of the game. They started out with a little fire, and they started out patient, and then they started chasing and chasing and chasing and chasing. And against Taiwan, Atsunori Inaba had consistently good at-bats. Ibáñez had consistently good at-bats. Inaba must have seen 30 pitches in that game. I wouldn't be surprised. Ibáñez was up there. He had 1-2 pitch at-bat. But most of the guys, whenever there were runners on base,
mm-hmm.
it was ball one, swing at the next pitch.
Yeah, they took a lot of strikes. They couldn't lay off some pitches out of zones. You called it. They had some really poor at bats, and they looked really bad. And like I said, they've been looking like the Chunichi Dragons.
They have.
Different color uniform.
And here's the thing. They've hit well when their backs have been to the wall.
Exactly.
When they were down 6-0 and the Cubans gave them an opportunity, they scored 3 runs and they had a chance to get back into that game. When Brazil, made one mistake in the 8th inning, Japan jumped all over them. Same thing with Taiwan. Taiwan gave them some opportunities. Wang Jianming was pretty good. He had some good stuff, and they got, I think they lost confidence against him that they would get pitches to hit, because they just started looking for the lesser of two evils.
Right.
What's worse than striking out on pitches that we can't hit, but let's swing at pitches we can't hit.
Yeah. Let's just go down swinging.
So against Taiwan, they got messed up, and finally they came around when they had a chance, and they beat Taiwan. They got fortunate. They had good at-bats at the end, and they had some good luck, and they made it into the first qualification game Sunday night against the Netherlands.
And as we sit here at Tokyo Dome right now, the staff is getting ready. I think they're going to let fans in fairly shortly, but
wow.
Japan is going to take on the Dutch team. fairly soon.
We got Bert Blyleven walking, carrying the bags of balls out to center field.
Yeah, how you doing, Coach? You talked to me the other day. That was nice. So let's talk about the other pools now.
Oh, sure.
I know I had predicted that Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic would advance in Pool C, and I high-fiving or high-fiving, I got that right. I think I said Canada and the United States were going to make it through Pool D, and nobody had Italy.
No.
I'm sure nobody has.
Well, Italy's beaten somebody in every tournament, and they started that with a win over Mexico when Edgar Gonzalez, who's a second baseman, was playing left field and mishandled a fly ball.
Right, yeah. And at the moment we speak, the United States is up 6-2 on Italy, and that's the second game for the United States. If Italy loses, it would be 2-1.
Right.
So we don't know who's going to advance out of that pool yet, but we know that it's not going to be Mexico. And I was fortunate. I taped the game between Mexico and Canada. I heard about the brawl before I got to the end of the game. And, of course, I went out running this morning, so I came back home from running, and I decided I was going to just watch the brawl. And it was a 9-3 score, and the catcher leading off in the ninth inning against the Mexican pitcher, I think it's Chris Robinson is the catcher, and he bunted for a single because Luis Cruz was playing deep at third. And the Mexican team found it offensive, but in this tournament style game where you the QPR or total
TBQ
runs,
or TQB or
run
SOS.
Differential essentially run differential and scoring a lot of runs is imperative because you don't know how many runs another team might score in a different game, so you've got to get as many as you can.
Right.
But they took offense to that. They looked at it as a regular season game kind of thing. This is a special tournament with special rules, and they just threw at the next batter.
Yep, and the Canadians dropped their gloves.
And we had a hockey game on a baseball
field. Exactly. That's right. The teams met at center ice.
But there were no five for fighting penalties.
Okay. Well, the thing is now we've got basically in that group all comes down to the final game, which is U.S. and Canada, and the winner is going to advance because we've got two teams. They're both 1-1. So one of those teams is going to win and join Mexico. Join Italy in Miami. How cool is that?
It's good. It's good for baseball. And I kept thinking as I was writing the other day, because there were three upset games the first day that I was writing here at the Tokyo Round, and I kept thinking, how good is this for baseball?
Yeah.
And I told you guys before, you got to pick some upsets. This is March Madness. It's just on the diamond. Upsets happen. You can't win every game, even if the team is the opponent is better than another team. Things happen during a game that change the momentum, and there are so many little parts of the game that are so important that change the outcome.
Yep.
That it's imperative that you stay focused
and
get lucky.
Obviously, these things can happen. I think Japan had no idea Brazil was going to be as tough as they were. South Korea, I think, just assumed they were going to advance to the second round like clockwork.
Right. Isn't that the team you picked to win? Your bracket is all blown up, isn't it?
Is that what you call that, a bracket?
Yeah.
Whatever
it's
it is
like the March Madness bracket. Your bracket is destroyed. Your finalists and your champion is gone.
Can I go to the hardware store and get a new one?
No, but you can push the brackets on your keyboard as much as you want. As many as you like, sir.
Oh, right on, babe. Okay, I thought I had lost my brackets there for a second.
So, yeah, I know that your South Korean team is gone, so do you want to pick another team?
Yeah, well, I have to pick out of the remaining pool from Asia.
Well, so you can't pick out of a team. You can't pick a team that's not remaining. I won't allow it.
Thank you. There is a God. I'm sorry. There is a John. Next question. Okay.
There are many Johns, but we won't discuss that. That's for another podcast entirely.
Yeah.
Would you like to pick another
I know the guy who does that podcast. He's downstairs. Okay. Okay. Wow. We have three teams left in Asia, Japan, the Netherlands, and Cuba. The Cubans are the closest to elimination. They have one game to win.
As we sit here, yes.
Right. They lose, they're out. They win, they're in. I still like Japan because of the home field advantage. To my heart, I can't see how they're going to possibly, unless they calm down and hit the way they're supposed to hit. they can't win. They're not going to win either of these games. So I'm going to pick Japan anyway because I go with my heart. And I'm going to pick Cuba because I love Victor Mesa. He's just a fun, dynamic, weird, crazy like a fox, silly guy, and more power to him. And the Cubans are fun to watch, and great fielding, great baseball. Almost the ultimate win yesterday, 14-0 over Taiwan. It was a beauty, work of art for the Cubans.
Well, again, that's the complaint I have about the pitch counts and how these rules hinder these lesser teams or these up and coming teams. And that was a great example how Taiwan maybe had. I think the manager might have, and he admitted making mistakes at the press conference last night after the game. I didn't ask him what mistakes he might have thought he made, but I thought one of them was taking a starting pitcher out very early and going to the bullpen and bringing in guys. And he ended up bringing in that teenager, the 18-year-old,
Sang
at the end of the game. And he only, I think it was Despagne.
Yeah.
Took him deep, and he stepped into the batter's box like, yeah, you're going to throw a fastball, aren't you, son? And I'm going to put it right over there. And he worked the count to 3-2, and boom.
Isn't that the one that went into the seats under the center field scoreboard?
No, it went out to left. That was a different
one. It might have gone through the left field wall in the back of the stadium.
People were not trying to catch it. They were scattering.
That's right.
All right. Okay. So you're picking. You're going to go with
To win it all.
Yeah. That your championship team was eliminated. You got to pick a new one.
I'll go with Japan.
With Japan.
Why not?
I don't think they need to hit so much to win. I think they need to do what they're doing, which is play really good defense and pitch well. And if they stay in some games, they can manufacture a run here and there.
I want to mention this. So we got a great quote from Takashi Toritani yesterday, and basically said, our mantra here is to play connect the dots Japanese baseball, sacrifice bunt, improve, build rallies the little way, small ball. He says, you know what? That's okay, but if I think about it too much, I'm going to end up with a short, choppy swing. I'll be a slap hitter, and I'm going to be lost.
Hmm.
So, and he's probably playing today, so hopefully he'll find himself.
All right. So that's enough about the WBC. There's one little camp note that I wanted to touch on, and that was an injury with the Hiroshima Carp.
Higashide
is out for the season. He's got he tore up his knee, essentially.
Yep.
I wish him the best, Akihiro Higashide. We wish him the best, and it brings up the question: what are the Carp going to do at second base? And they had Higashide was injured a couple times. He was out at times last year, and they had a couple guys come in. But
I don't know. They have, like you said, he has not been the healthiest puppy for the last couple of years. So I think they're going to have somebody come in.
Yeah, that's too bad for them. And hopefully they can get somebody to come in. Maybe they'll go for a foreign player. Maybe they'll look from within.
Maybe, yes, the Lions will trade a Esteban Hermon.
Probably not. All right, let's go to fielding questions.
All right.
Okay, so we got from Pablo Cruz. That's a band. It's a group from the 80s.
Maybe it's related to Wang Chung.
No, because that's not really... Okay, if you think so, sir.
We're going international, man.
He's from the Bronx, and he has a question. Let's listen to it.
My name is Pablo Cruz from the Bronx, and my thing is I always wanted to play baseball in Japan, which is weird because I guess everybody dreams of playing the MLB, which is the world's best. But the thing that gets me is that the fan in Japan is just like, they have a cheer for every player. They have a song for every player. And that calls my attention. So my question is, how can I try out for a Japanese team living here in the Bronx?
All right, Pablo. Gosh.
Yeah.
This is interesting. For me, I have three words for you. Call your agent.
Yeah. Get a video and get your agent, wherever your agent, your coach, whoever represents you, to call a Japanese team. Find out who their scouts are. you know, and twist their arm and just keep calling them. Just call them every single day, fax them every single day until they figure the only way they're going to get rid of you is to put you in touch with one of their scouts.
Right. And one thing I can tell you is that there are periodic tryouts here.
Sure.
You can try to find out when they are and come over and participate in their open tryouts to the public.
And the other one, the other route is the independent leagues here, because foreign players are getting taken out of the independent leagues into Japan, especially if you don't mind playing in Kobe or Osaka for the Oryx Buffaloes.
Right. Okay.
And on that note, one guy who was signed out of the independent league by the Oryx Buffaloes last year, Alessandro Maestri, was the winning pitcher in Italy's first game over Mexico.
And he's pitching for Oryx.
He's pitching for Oryx. We had three winners in NPB in the Pool C and D. We had Maestri. We had a former NPB player, Giancarlo Alvarado, for Puerto Rico. And Ryan Vogelsong, I guess, is going to win today.
Right, right.
So go, guys.
Yeah, our NPB guys are doing very well. Maybe we can figure out how to track all of them. In fact, the word track tells me that I should probably contact NPB Tracker and see if he can pick up all the guys for us and see what they did, so, put a little list together for us.
Yeah, before the WBC, it was all about the strongest team is the one with most major leaguers. I think you're going to have to start looking for the strong teams with the most guys who played in Japan.
That's right, that's right. Now, before the WBC actually got started, and this is not a letter, but I did a little survey among bloggers and writers, Michael Westbay, who does the Pro Yaku Report podcast, he said he's picking Japan to win. Dave Houston, who works with Jim Allen at Kyoto News, he picked Puerto Rico to win. Jason Koskri of the Japan Times, he's going with Japan. We know that Jim Allen has changed his pick from South Korea to Japan.
That's the sound of my pick being changed. I'm jumping ship. I'm becoming John Gibson.
Whoa.
He's jumping off the bandwagon.
Cool. You're not that cool.
I'm plenty cool. I'm plenty cool.
And Claudio Rodriguez over in Toronto, he also picked Japan. So it's just myself who picked the Dominican Republic and Dave Houston who picked Puerto Rico who haven't picked Japan. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, I think there's a lot of heart. There's a lot of heart, not a lot of brains, maybe.
You hear that, Michael Westbay?
I love Japan. I just don't see it. In my brain, I know they're good enough to win it.
Yeah.
But in my eyes, I don't see it yet.
All right. All right. Well, thank you, Pablo, for the question, and thank you, everyone, for contributing your pick. Your opinions and inquiries help drive the show, so we encourage more from everyone. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game.
Send us your voices.
Yeah, especially MP3s. That was really cool. It was a really good sound.
It was good.
Mr. Pablo Cruz. I was impressed.
Well, he's used to recording.
All right. Before we go, I'd like to acknowledge that this is the second anniversary of the Tohoku earthquake and tsunami that killed so many and left us left the area devastated. So we're thinking about you people up there. We're thinking about, hopefully all you guys are thinking about people in Japan and from wherever you're listening.
Right.
And that area is rebuilding. It's long from complete. We wish them good luck, and we're thinking about them.
Yeah.
All right, please send your questions or comments via MP3 or email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll play them on the show. You can also leave us a comment or question on the Facebook page. And we, again, thank OneWorldSports.com, and we look forward to working with them. And I will also be writing my blog there for the entire season. So check out the blog on OneWorldSports.com.
So we'll be back with you after the WBC is over.
That's right. Yeah, and we'll have a in 2 more weeks, we're going to have previews for both leagues in one show, and then we're going to be going weekly after the 24th. It's going to get busy, dude.
It's going to be Japanese weekly baseball podcast.
All right. Well, let's enjoy our baseball.
All right, bud.
All right.
Good job.
Bye-bye.